edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, licensed naturopathic physician and herbalist and professor at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, one of the colleges that I helped found. And we're here to bring you another edition of wonderful radio where we explore issues in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. I'm going to have Mr. Terry Lemeron as my guest. Now, Terry has 40 years experience in the health food industry, and he owned several health food stores. And also, I kind of became familiar with Terry's work through one of my professors, Dr. Michael Murray, as well as two of my roommates who are now esteemed naturopathic physicians, Dr. Gaetano Morello and Dr. Kim Vanderlinden up in Canada, who helped get some of Terry's products into Canada. And Terry has researched and developed over 300 nutritional and botanical formulas. His mission is to continue to introduce revolutionary natural products that will improve the health of America. And over the past 40 years, he's accumulated a wealth of experience and knowledge in this field. He does radio and podcasts like us, and a lot of speaking engagements. And he also has written two books, Seven Keys to Vibrant Health and Seven Keys to Unlimited Personal Achievement. And his website is terrytalksnutrition.com. Today's topic, we're going to be talking a lot about inflammation and pain and its connection with many different pathophysiologies. Terry, are you there?
I am here. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to have you on.
I see we have some mutual friends, and I spent all day yesterday with Gaetano and his wife, Carlene.
Wow, yeah. I don't know if you knew, I was Gaetano's housemate for years.
I'm sorry.
At best, I'm sorry, exactly. Oh, boy, that's funny. Well, anyway, I'm excited to have you on and talk a little bit about inflammation. Now, this has become kind of popular, but back in the old days, it was only people in the holistic realm of education and nutrition and naturopathic doctors and other functional doctors like Dr. Bland and things like that who began to talk about the link of inflammation being the root of disease. I remember the late Bill Mitchell, who's a esteemed colleague and friend and unfortunately had an untimely passing, talking about controlling inflammation with diet and lifestyle, and those were the keys of naturopathic medicine. So tell us a little bit about your take on inflammation being the root of many diseases.
Well, I think inflammation, we know it is both good and bad. We know that when we injure ourselves, we stub our toe or we hit our finger with a hammer or we cut ourselves, we're going to have a process of inflammation that comes in the healing process. There's heat, and there's swelling, and there's pain, and there's a variety of symptoms that are associated with that healing process, and that's all good. But it's only for a very short period of time. But because of the American diet and because of our lifestyle, we have a low-grade chronic inflammatory process going on all the time because we are trying to heal all the time. The body is all in a healing process. Because of the diet, large quantities of refined carbohydrates, refined sugar, large quantities of omega-6 fatty acids compared to omega-3 fatty acids, stress, all of these conditions continue to cause inflammation. And we know that from experts, they've told us that inflammation is at the bottom line or the seed of probably 80 to 90% of all of our diseases today, whether it be osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, anything that ends with an itis, also along with obesity and high blood pressure and cardiovascular disease. We have many, many conditions that are caused by the inflammatory process. So if we can reduce inflammation, we can actually have a better quality of life.
Let's break inflammation down into some of the things that physicians would see perhaps on some type of a blood test, whether it's standard blood test or functional medicine blood test. You know, I screen a lot of myself and Dr. Kammeyer wrote best-selling book on arthritis years ago, and one of the things that we always look at is a lot of the inflammation markers that we do see in the bloodstream. And some of them actually, Terry, are what I say outside the box. I'll give you one example, like the fact that LDL rises in people with rheumatoid arthritis 10 years before they get the disease. And a lot of people that practice what I call compartmentalized medicine, they just look at LDL as a cardiovascular marker instead of a inflammatory marker of the entire body. Can you talk a little bit about some of the symptoms of inflammation, maybe go more into depth with that, and maybe some of these markers?
Well, I'm not real technical, so I don't know the realm of some of the markers.
Yeah.
But some of the symptoms that we have, of course, would be pain. Pain is a common one that is caused by the inflammatory process. And people deal with pain of arthritis, and both rheumatoid and osteoarthritis, and a variety of conditions where we have pain as one of the most common symptoms. And there are ways to deal with those with, you know, a variety of natural substances. But the basic foundation for eliminating inflammation and eliminating the symptoms that are associated with, of course, is diet. And the American diet has changed so much in the last 100 years that it probably changed more in that period of time than it has done in the previous 3 million years. And that's why I think people are being constantly prescribed medications. They're looking at these as diseases, but they're probably disorders that are caused by the changes in our lifestyle and our diet.
Yeah, like one of the things that I've been trying to teach my patients is that if they're eating foods that are off on the glycemic index, in other words, they have a high glycemic index, that meaning they raise your blood sugar very quickly, that can lead to lots of inflammation through insulin. Now we used to think insulin was just, you know, something that brought sugar into the bloodstream to burn, but now we know that insulin has a dark side, and if we keep triggering insulin, we get insulinism, which then leads to inflammation and eventually diabetes, which now we consider diabetes an inflammatory disease. So that's what I meant by thinking outside the box. You know, that we used to think, well, maybe we could check the patient's dead rate or the CRP or, you know, these kind of things that people do on a standard blood test. Maybe their white blood cell count is up and that shows that they have inflammation or maybe an infection. But now we're finding out that it's related to so many different diseases, even like Alzheimer's disease. You wanted me to talk a little bit about, ask you about dementia and Alzheimer's. How does inflammation play a role in that?
Well, we know that from oxidative stress, which probably precedes inflammation in most cases, we have damage of the cells, which causes inflammation of the cells, and then causes the laying down of protein and beta amyloid plaque and tau, which is a certain kind of protein that calls tangled, which causes a miscommunication in the brain. We lose the ability of the acetylcholine, and we have dementia, maybe even more severe as Alzheimer's disease, but it's an inflammatory oxidative process, and this causes the brain to malfunction. We lose our cognitive skills and our learning abilities, and this is a very sad condition because so many people that are plagued with this lose their ability to even communicate or even know their relatives, and so it's very, very difficult for the caregivers and difficult for the families, and I think this whole thing comes down to the whole inflammatory process that's brought about, as you've said, in the American diet and the way we live our lifestyle. And I know, Dr. Z, you've probably seen this in some of your patients, that I always feel that when doctors call these diseases, you know, GERD, acid reflux, ulcers, and many other conditions, which are not based on a disease so much, but on disorders, And our body is out of balance with nature. It's out of order. And once, we, you know, I've seen people with type 2 diabetes, and they're on medication. But when they change their diet, they lose weight, they start doing a moderate amount of exercise, they no longer have a high blood sugar level, they're no longer considered to be a diabetic. And I think we can change many of these things by correcting how we live in order to make a better quality of life.
Absolutely. Now, you talked a little bit about oxidative stress. Can you give some examples of what that's like to people? They might not understand what oxidative stress is, Terry.
Well, oxidative stress, very simply, is like taking metal or iron and laying it outside in the environment, and it starts to rust. You have oxidative damage. But we have oxidative damage from a lot of other items or chemicals. Oxygen in itself that we breathe can actually be harmful to us if we don't have the antioxidants to control it. But also pollution, tobacco, alcohol, chemicals, preservatives, pesticides, all of these chemicals that have an ability to cause damage to the cells or cause oxidative stress. It's kind of a silly way to say it, but we can actually rust inside. Our cells are damaged by the oxidative stress. And when they're damaged, they prematurely die. They don't function as normally as they should. And it's like causing inflammation within our cells. And then we have all these other conditions. So our diet in America is a oxidative damaging diet. We don't have the antioxidants that we should have. And they're commonly found in our fruits and vegetables, which Americans don't eat today. There's very few people in America that eat enough servings of fruits and vegetables to classify that they're getting a quantity of antioxidants that will prevent the oxidative damage. It's been estimated that only about 9% of the population in America consume an adequate intake of fruits and vegetables, 5 to 9 servings a day, and children is only about 5%. And it's kind of scary to think that if the children are only eating 5%, that's the model for the future. So they may be dragging this 5% into the future, and then their children are going to be even eating less. They said recently that the American dinner today in most homes is pizza.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Pretty scary.
And, well, you know, that kind of gets into, I know you worked in the health food industry for a long time. And still do. And so I think a lot of it boils down to not only education, but trying to reach people and also trying to, it becomes like a political science. Again, quoting Dr. Bill Mitchell, he used to say, holistic medicine is a political science because we're really trying to change society. In your introduction, we talked about that your mission is to improve the health of America. So I think one of the things that we need to do is I'll leave it up to you. What do you think we need to do? How can we turn this around, Terry?
Well, this is going to be a
let's brainstorm.
This could be a major goal. But I think, you know, our mission is we want to change the health of America even one person at a time. Even if you can make one small change someone's life, it's gratifying. You know, I always say, yes, I make money. I get a salary. I get paid. But it doesn't give me goosebumps. But when I can help somebody change their life, change the way they feel, make them have a better quality of life, or help reverse whatever they're challenged with the help of their physician, of course, but giving them some advice, educating them to know that maybe what they're doing is not the right option or choice. And maybe, for example, I have a huge passion to get people off statin drugs. And I've done 3 or 4 lectures in the last month on the dangers of statin drugs. And not everyone who is on statin drugs should be on statin drugs. And this is what people should have the option to know. People believe that if they go on statin drugs, it's going to prevent a heart attack or a stroke, and in most cases, it will not. But they don't have that education. They don't have that ability to have information to make those choices, and when they're prescribed something, they just take it because they believe that that's what they should be doing. And I think people should begin to take responsibility. You know, for example, my grandfather, my two great-grandmothers, my grandmother, they all lived in the late 90s. But they didn't worry what they ate because what they ate was natural. My grandfather, the food he ate, he didn't worry about what was in it because it was all organic to him. It was organic food. We go out and buy organic food. He just called it organic food because it was. He didn't worry how much nutrition he got because he didn't have to because everything was natural. He drank raw milk off the farm. He ate the eggs that he raised. He had his own berry patches. He had his own apple orchard. He had his own fruits and vegetables. He had his own cow. He had everything he needed to have. But we go to grocery stores that are 20, 30,000 square feet or bigger, and there's maybe 40 or 50,000 packaged goods in the supermarket that are made of white flour, white sugar, omega-6 fatty acid oils like soybean oils and corn oils, and then flavoring and artificial flavoring and coloring. That does not represent food, but people are filling their bellies and putting out the pains of hunger, and they think they're eating something to satisfy themselves, but they never stop to think, am I nourishing myself? And now we have to stop and think about that because we're not nourishing ourselves. People have deficiencies, and they're having what is called diseases, and I call them disorders because we're just out of balance with nature. We're not doing the things we should be doing to keep our bodies healthy, but we were never taught nutrition, nor did we ever have to be taught nutrition until the commercial interest said, let's change the food, make it cheaper, and let it stay on the shelf for 100 years, take everything out of it that would be spoiling so it doesn't spoil. We've changed the diet in 100 years that it no longer represents what nourishes human beings anymore.
Yeah, and that's reached both suburbanites and, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, people like living in Detroit. I know you lived in Wisconsin for a long time. I don't know if you still do, but...
Still do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking about inner city Detroit. Like, you know, how do we help these folks where all they have is the local market without a lot of green food around and the packaged stuff is there and it's sometimes, it's a sin that sometimes it's cheaper for folks to go get a dollar meal at McDonald's than to go and buy some kale and some organic chicken and nice vegetables and make a soup.
Yes.
It's just, it's totally, and that's what I mean by changing society. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think your show is an asset to the community. And I know how you reach out and you're reaching some people, and those people hopefully will educate other people. I think, we're a small voice, but we're still a strong voice, and it's getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
More and more people are starting to get interested in taking care of themselves, changing. You know, they're tired of medications, they're tired of drugs, they're tired of all the prescriptions they're taking. They want to have something natural. They're afraid of the side effects of the drugs. TV on advertising tells about a drug that may eliminate or at least reduce the symptoms of a condition like, say, asthma. But then at the end of the commercial, they tell the side effects that the side effects could cause cancer or death. So some of these drugs are so dangerous and so life-threatening and so scary to people that are listening to the side effects, they're beginning to say, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to take something for my asthma that's going to cause cancer. The risk probably is very low, but it's there. That's why they mention it. It could cause death. So they're looking for things like, hey, I want to do something natural. What can I do? So they're starting to look for places where they can get education. They're tuning into your program. They're tuning into other programs that are on health and nutrition. They're asking questions. The whole environment of the health food industry and those like naturopathic physicians and homeopathic doctors and alternative physicians, they're getting more and more requests for these doctors to be able to assist them because they want to do something more natural.
Yeah, and that, I tell you, that's the prescription, that's for sure, for the future. Now, you mentioned a little bit about heart disease and that you've been really on a mission to get people off of the statin drug. Let's talk a little bit about that because that kind of ties in with some of the questions that we wanted to cover in the program there. What does inflammation have to do with heart disease and why aren't the statins delivering? And also you can add, why do you think the statins were developed based on the whole cholesterol pathophysiology? Maybe you can just kind of run people through all that.
Well, I think in the beginning, I think it was innocently done. I think statin drugs were to look for an answer that would help to lower cholesterol. And they do work. They do lower cholesterol. But do we want to lower cholesterol? Does everybody have to be on a statin drug thinking that it prevents heart attacks and strokes? And in most cases, it does not. There's no scientific proof that statin drugs are able to prevent heart attacks and strokes. They're used to lower cholesterol, but we have to realize that cholesterol is a critical nutrient. In fact, it is so critical that we don't have to rely on an outside source. We don't have to eat food in order to get cholesterol as a nutrient. Our body makes it. Our body, our cells make it. Our liver makes it. It makes 80 to 90% of the cholesterol that we use in our body to produce, first of all, sex hormones, adrenal hormones. We cannot produce vitamin D without cholesterol. It's good for the nervous system. For example, our brain is 2% of our body weight, but we use 25% of the cholesterol for our brain function. Cholesterol is a nutrient. It's a vital cell component that everybody should have at a level that is consistent with their body metabolism and chemistry. And what the doctors have come to today, they've said, get it down as low as you can because it's more healthy. But they don't have any number to shoot for. I've had a doctor say to a woman, I want it down to 100. Well, that woman is sick. She's got muscle pain. She's got muscle wasting. She's a young lady. She's about 50 years old, and she has to push with her arms and hands on the arms of the chairs to get her out of a chair because she has no muscle strength. She's lost the strength in her legs. She feels terrible. She's got short-term memory loss. She is getting more debilitated because of the statin drugs, and there's a lot of controversy by experts as to whether or not they are of any value and should we be looking at something else. But they have targeted so much that statin drugs are the miracle for heart disease, for the prevention of heart disease, that we have failed to look outside the box, as you say, to look at maybe it's something else. And I think that something else is inflammation. It's also because we smoke in this country. We eat tons of sugar. Sugar is very harmful to heart function. You talked about insulin reaction, insulin resistance. That is a factor. The high glycemic index foods are very harmful, causing inflammation. And our muscles, as our muscles weaken because of the statin drugs, because we know that when the enzyme in the liver that produces that produces cholesterol is inhibited by the statin drugs, it also inhibits CoQ10, which is a very, very critical nutrient for heart function. And this also is very important for muscle strength. So when we have loss of muscle strength, when we have muscle pain, it's because we have cut off that enzyme that produces CoQ10. But when we have muscle atrophy, when we have muscle wasting, when we have muscle pain, the heart is a muscle. It has the same damaging effect from the statin drugs as the muscles in our body. So statin drugs are made for a very small segment of people in this world, and that is a man who's probably middle-aged, probably in the age of 40 to 59, who has already had a heart attack, already has documented cardiovascular disease. Then a statin drug may be benefit for that segment of people, but that's a very, very small percentage of people. The large percentage of people in the United States that are on statin drugs should never, never be on statin drugs. Women should never be on statin drugs, because in that case, it raises breast cancer risk by 1,500%. Children are now being suggested that they should be on statin drugs, and the FDA has approved statin drugs for children over the age of 8, and their brain continues to develop until children are 25. They need cholesterol. They need CoQ10 to develop their bodies until they're mature. But we're cutting off all those vital nutrients when we put them on statin drugs.
So one of the functions of cholesterol, you're saying, is to create a lot of these hormones and somewhat anti-inflammatory substances. You know, I always tell patients cholesterol is, one of the functions of cholesterol is like spackle. So if you have a crack in your, I'm home on vacation this week, so I'm doing some work around the house, and I'm just like outside spackling something and whatever. And I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of like cholesterol. It acts like, it kind of acts to smooth things over when there's lots of cracks forming in different areas. Of course, with the house, it's foundational and structural. But in our bodies, what's causing the cracks in the arteries that then the body is using the cholesterol like a spackle? And you're basically saying it's inflammation from the sugars, from the spiking and of insulin, from the free radicals, which I guess would be in our antioxidant poor diet, rancid fats you were talking about, and the omega-3s and 6s, which I'd like to talk more about, that's for sure. Also, damaging environmental poisons, I think you touched base on. So these are the things that, but you see, there's no drug that controls all those factors, Terry.
No,
those are all lifestyle things, and you can't patent things to deal with all those things. If that's really the underlying cause of the heart disease, there's no one going to make a million. There's no stockholders that are going to make money doing that.
Oh, heavens no. No, they'll never want to do that because that'll put themselves out of business. But, you know, the cholesterol in the arteries, yes, you can measure that. But it isn't there because it's causing the damage. It's there because it's there, as you said, I always call it a Band-Aid. It's like a Band-Aid going there to cover up the cracks, to cover up the inflammation, and it's a repair agent.
Right.
It's not the most damaging component. It's not the enemy. Cholesterol is our friend, and we should treat it such because it's so vital to the health of our body for brain function, for heart function, for repairing the damage in the arteries, for repairing damage in the nervous system. Cholesterol, we make our, like we said, sex hormones, adrenal hormones. We can't live without cholesterol. And to drive it lower, we don't know how far that it's too low. When is it too low?
Right.
I just talked to a gentleman the other day after one of my lectures. He said, my cholesterol is 212. His HDL was over 50, which is great for a man. His LDL was 39. His triglycerides was 89. And he said, the doctor wants him on statin drugs. I said, well, I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you what to do. You got to talk to your doctor. But if that were me, I would never go on a statin drug.
Well, doctors have to spend a little bit more time and educate people about the components of the lipid profile. In other words, when you go to get your lipid run, most people go every year or so. They fast for 12, 14 hours or so, and they get their lipids run. The doctors need to be very much more educated about the components of the lipid panel. Like, for instance, if the triglycerides are high, it usually means that the patient is having a hard time burning carbohydrates, and thus they need to adjust the amount of fiber and carbohydrates. I know, like, there's a product out there that I love, which is the PGX fiber, which really slows down the gastric emptying. And that's only if they really need extra fiber. They could get it from ground flax seeds, eating whole grains and things like that to slow down that the spiking of the insulin, and of course get off the white flour and the right carbohydrates. That's the triglycerides. Also, there's some evidence that they may be low in lipoic acid, which is very important to lower the triglycerides by bringing them into the body's furnace, the mitochondria, to kind of burn these things. But if the LDLs are elevated and oxidative LDLs are high, that's definitely a sign of deficiencies of antioxidants. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the antioxidants. Which ones do you think are most important, the ones that our body makes and synthesizes, like glutathione or whatnot, or is it the carotenes or the flavonoids? I know you've developed a lot of products which have, you know, cutting-edge flavonoids and carotenoid complexes and things like that. Talk a little bit about the antioxidant family for us.
Well, there's a variety of them, and I think most of them are associated with either spices or vegetables or fruits. And I know, you know, your colleague with Bill Mitchell, he made a very powerful concentrate, the anthocyanins, which are a group of polyphenols that are very, very powerful antioxidants. And he found that helped in many, many different kinds of health conditions. The berries, you take blackcurrant, aronia, the darker the berry, the more polyphenols, the more anthocyanins, the more antioxidant benefits. Blueberries, cranberries, blackberries, all of these are very, very powerful antioxidants, but we don't consume them in the American diet. Very few people consume all these good polyphenols. You find them in apples, you can find them in grapes, grape seeds. These are very, very powerful antioxidants, and they make huge differences in the quality of the vascular system, the function of the heart, the capillary system, putting out the free radical damage. For example, one of my favorites is curcumin, which is a component that's found out of turmeric. It's found in the root of the turmeric. And, you know, we're talking about antioxidant effects that based on ORAC value. The ORAC value of blueberries is around 6,000. ORAC value of cranberries is around 9,000. Acai berries is about 20 or 30,000. Then you get into the spices like cloves and thyme and rosemary and curcumin. They run up into the million range of antioxidant benefits.
Hmm. Spices are very, really good like that then.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I heard? We had a guest on maybe half a year ago, talked about dark chocolate powder.
Oh, absolutely.
Now that's something that most people could do. How simple would it be to get some low glycemic almond milk, put your favorite dark chocolate powder loaded with those polyphenols you talked about, and maybe added some natural sweetener to it, like a stevia or whatnot, and make a healthy chocolate milkshake instead of, you know, the garbage that we find.
Yeah.
Why not? See, that's something I think that most people could look forward to, and then it becomes behavior, Terry, where, you know, they look forward to eating these, having this shake, and you don't need to tell them how good it is, especially if it's a kid, because they won't eat it because it's just good for you. But nonetheless, it is good, and I'm shocked that people don't eat the berries. There's so many delicious berry recipes out there. So a lot of it has to do with knowledge, making things easier. Let's face it, we you know, economically, I don't know how people did it in the old days where we had one breadwinner and one of the parents stayed home usually to raise the kids. Now two breadwinners can hardly keep us afloat. So,
well, you know, our grandparents, they raised everything on the farm.
Uh-huh.
They raised their own berries. I used to pick berries for my grandfather. He'd pay me a nickel a basket for the raspberries. He had his own apple trees. Yeah, everything was on the farm. I mean, they just ate what they grew, and it didn't take a lot of money to do that. And Grandma canned everything, and she made all the good dark brown bread that was coarse and heavy and all these good things. You know, our food is our medicine, and I don't think we'll ever get away from that. I don't care how much drugs they make, and they talk about cancer research and all these things. I'm sorry, you got to go back to the diet. I just saw research on olive oil. If you would consume 1 to 2 tablespoons a day of olive oil, and not exactly off the spoon, but on your salad, cooking with it, using it liberally in your diet every day, you could reduce cardiovascular disease by 40%.
Yeah.
If you used it really liberally, like up to 4 tablespoons a day, you could reduce cardiovascular disease by 70%.
Wow.
Reduce the risk. Now, what drug can do that? I don't know of a drug that has those kind of statistics. Almonds, they lower cardiovascular disease by 30%. So what I do is I make a spread. I grind raw almonds in my wife's health food store. She has a health food store. I grind the almond butter. Then I mix that with olive oil. I add in raw cacao powder, and then I added a little bit of sea salt, and then a little bit of aronia powder, and I make me a spread, and I use that. I can even eat it by the spoonful, but you got a very, very healthy, delicious spread.
Very good. You know, we got to take a break. So
all right.
We're going to continue this and give good tips for our listeners out there. So stay tuned right here to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z while we take a little break and talk about our wonderful station and some of the other programs. Stay tuned. And we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, and we're here with Terry Lemeron talking about all things nutrition. And look at Terry's website, please, terrytalksnutrition.com. And he's the author of many books, two books, actually, Seven Keys to Vibrant Health and Seven Keys to Unlimited Personal Achievement, which we'd like to touch base on there. He's also researched and developed over 300 nutritional and botanical formulas with his various commercial ventures in the past, and we're glad to have him here to talk about inflammation. Welcome back, Terry.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit about, we talked about pain, and you know, we just kind of talked a little bit about that in the beginning of the program. Let's recircle and talk about that. Now, there's pain of, like, you know, you go out and you do too much yard work, or, you know, I actually went to black belt karate camp, boot camp this weekend, and I'm in a little bit of muscle pain now.
Yeah, I bet you are.
but then there's, you know, people that have these chronic degenerative diseases. I'm seeing people in their 50s with needing new hips and things like that. Yeah, sometimes it has to do with the ravages of undiagnosed Lyme disease or some other pathology like that. But oftentimes it just has to do with they never really got their chronic inflammation down. So talk a little bit about pain and what's the connection between inflammation and pain?
Well, whenever you have inflammation, you can have a possible pain. Inflammation can occur silently. It can be, you can have cardiovascular disease that is caused by inflammation. You lose the ability of your heart function based on inflammation. You don't know that. You don't feel that. You don't have that pain until maybe it's too late. Many people have a heart attack and die and don't even know it because the first symptom was death. But in many cases, inflammation can cause deterioration of the joints, such as the knees and the hips. And that constant inflammation causes destruction of the cartilage and the joint and the area around it, and pretty soon you lost the mobility, the flexibility. You've got pain. You're walking with a different gait. Maybe you're scheduled for surgery. This all comes from the inflammatory process, and it comes from, you know, large consumptions of alcohol, large consumption of sugar and sweets and refined carbohydrates and omega-6 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory. So it causes inflammation. Our American diet causes that inflammation. And then we have the pain. Then we are looking for something, like you said, maybe the black belt contest that you went to, or the competition.
Mm-hmm.
It could be gardening. It could be golfing. It could be, you know, people sit in front of a computer all week, and then on the weekend they go out with their kids and they try to play football, or they try to play a pickup basketball game, and pretty soon they've got pain and soreness, and that's oxidative stress. That's inflammation. Now, that's going to go away in a few days maybe, but constantly it's going to be there for a longer period of time. And there are ways to get rid of that pain, you know, like curcumin and boswellia and DLPA and natokinase. These ingredients are very, very wonderful for reducing inflammation. And when they overexercise or they have too much competitive sport, or they're the weekend warrior, or they're doing all these things from overuse and extended periods of time, it causes inflammation, but we can deal with that on an ongoing basis.
Now, they're not those things that you mentioned, they're contrast those with the over-the-counter and prescription COX-2 inhibitors, and why are those things dangerous for the heart? I know they took, for instance, I believe they took Vioxx off the market because it was creating you know, it was effectively helping people with pain, but it was also causing the heart disease and some of these episodes. Yet the good things that you mentioned there, nattokinase, bromelain, curcumin and things like that, they don't have those types of side effects.
You know, natural ingredients, Dr. Z, are forgiving. They balance the body. They're not strong enough to stop the function of the body. Vioxx, when it came out, it was hailed as the cure for arthritis, the cure for pain. And drugs are so powerful that they inhibit the COX-2 enzyme to such a degree that, yes, it worked temporarily, but in the long run, because it had blocked and inhibited COX-2 for such a long period of time and so severely that it caused blood clots and it caused heart attacks and it caused heart disease, and so the FDA took it off the market. When you use natural substances, they don't have that degree where they stop and inhibit completely. They balance. They balance the COX-2 and the 5-lox enzyme so that they are more natural in balance with the body's metabolism. And when we talk about Vioxx, but, for example, Tylenol. Tylenol kills 16,000 people annually. That's the amount of average death based on Tylenol. And, you know, we worry about kids being on street drugs, the damage that, you know, cocaine and all those kind of things. Tylenol is the number one cause of liver failure in the United States. There's a lot of damage done by these over-the-counter preparations, and people buy them in any quantities that they prefer because they say, well, they're not prescription, so they can be very harmful. So they take them more consistently and more frequently because they're over-the-counter. They can buy large quantities of them. It's their medications to get rid of pain. But if they would use natural substances, I know that in your practice, you can give very, very good advice to your patients to use some of these natural modalities that work more effectively. For example, curcumin. At MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, Texas, and Baylor University at Dallas, Texas, they've done a tremendous amount of research with curcumin. In fact, in one special curcumin called BCM95, BCM95 curcumin was found to be the most powerful substance they've ever tested in the laboratory. Different than the human body, but in the laboratory, they said it was the most powerful substance they've ever tested. Regardless of the compound they tested, it was the most powerful anti-inflammatory, the most powerful pain reliever. It modulated the immune system. It prevented liver damage. It was consistent with chemo drugs because it reduced the toxicity of the chemo drugs. It made the chemo drugs more effective. It was one of the most powerful substances they've ever been able to examine in the laboratory, and it had no side effects. It had a powerful antioxidant effect. That's the kind of natural remedies that people can find at your office and maybe health food stores and around the country where people can use natural modalities and get results and not fear the side effects. But they also have to change how they live in order to prevent the ongoing pain and damage. And if people have things like osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis, or they have pain that they don't understand, I sure hope that they go to a physician and be diagnosed properly to find out why they have this problem, and then work with the doctor, then choose either, you know, everybody has freedom, so choose, if you want a drug, choose a drug, but choose something natural that makes it more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well put. I use curcumin all the time, and I like to add some lecithin to the curcumin or get the one that's tied in with the phosphatidylcholine to enhance its or if people are just using the spice with a little bit of black pepper to enhance the absorption of it, because it turns out that there's some synergy between some of these natural substances. What about, let's talk about, we've glanced on this and talked a little bit about the oils. You said that omega-6 oils are causing some of the chronic inflammation, and the omega-3s, I guess, are very good in cooling chronic inflammation. Tell us a little bit about oils and what happens to oils when we eat processed foods, and tell us a little about the history of the oils.
Well, it's a long process, but it comes down to that our diet never contained large quantities of oils. We consumed fatty substances in our food in very, very small quantities. But then because of commercial interest in soybeans and corn, they came up with corn oil and soybean oil. And it's a really long history and a long story, because when they found that, oh, for example, saturated fats are bad for us. Well, I don't believe they are. I believe that in moderation that they're very good for us and we can use saturated fats. But when they maligned saturated fats, then the commercial interest said, let's do the corn oil, let's do the soybean oil. And these are very, very fragile oils, very perishable oils. And when they're processed, they do it because they heat them. They use a hydraulic pressure to squeeze the oils out of the seeds and the corn, which generates more heat. So you've got a lot of damage by heat, processing. By the time you get them to a stage of processing, they're scorched, they're burnt, they're rancid, and now they have to clean them up, so they deodorize them, they put them into bottles, and they sell them, and you can see right through them. There's nothing natural in the oils. All the natural nutrients have been destroyed by the heat. There's nothing there to protect the oil from damage. All the antioxidants are destroyed, like the vitamin E and tocotrienols and tocopherols are all gone. They're damaged. They're destroyed. And everything that is commercially made, like cookies, crackers, bread, they use large quantities of soybean oil. In fact, 70% of all the soybean oil is used in our preparation of packaged foods. Mm-hmm. We don't consume it at the table. We consume it in the foods that we eat at the table. These are very rancid oils, and we should be getting about one or two omega-6 for every one omega-3. Some like it 1-to-1, some like it 2-to-1. Or maybe even 3-to-1 of omega-6 to omega-3. But the American diet could be as high as 20 times omega-6 to omega-3, and that has changed the way that we consume our oils today. And so we're getting a large quantities of omega-6, and they have shown that omega-6 fatty acids are pro-inflammatory. They create arachidonic acid in our body, which is a pro-inflammatory compound, which causes inflammation. So our diet causes the inflammation.
So the more bread, and so it's not only the white flour that's spiking up our insulin and creating inflammation, Terry. It's also the oils that we're putting in these things that's a culprit as well.
Well, you know, Dr. Z, most packaged goods are made out of white flour, white sugar, white salt, oil to combine it into something, into a shape. Then they extrude it into some other kind of shape. They flavor it. They color it with artificial flavor and artificial coloring. And people think that's food, you know, like like something like Screaming Yellow Zonkers, some of these snack foods. And all they're doing, like chips, for example, they're fried in oils. They're salted. They're not healthy for us. They're non-nutritious. They're loaded with calories, loaded with oils that have been damaged and damage our cells, very unhealthy food. And the American diet is primarily that kind of food.
Yeah, and so I can see where we're heading. So what would be good options as far as if people wanted to get good omega-3 oils into their diet naturally without having to buy something that has omega-3 oils? What are some good suggestions that your wife would have in her health food store?
Well, you can get the fish oils that are very high in omega-3 fatty acids. There's a new one from France now that is a omega-3 fatty acid that's taken from the head of the fish. It is not a fish oil, but it's an omega-3 fatty acid that complex naturally to phospholipids with the DHA and EPA. That's very, very healthy. You can get flaxseed, which is a plant source. You can get chia seeds. You can get rosehip. Walnuts are a good source. These are all excellent sources of omega-3 fatty acids, which will help balance off the omega-6, but reduce the omega-6, reduce packaged goods, reduce the things that are mostly found that are made in laboratories, made in food factories, not grown, not produced in the farm, not produced in the soil, but just made in the laboratory. These are the things that are harmful to our body because they're not made by nature. They're made by man. And when you have those kinds of combinations, they're not healthy.
Somebody told me once that when people shop, they should shop the perimeters of the grocery store and avoid the valley of death, which is kind of in between the grocery stores. Have you ever heard that, Terry?
Oh, absolutely. That's a good way to put it. I never thought about the valley of death, but I've always shopped the perimeter, going to shop the fruits and vegetables, which are usually on the right-hand side of the supermarket, go into the dairy section and find raw cheese and whatever you can, and good quality cheese and milk products. Shop the meat counter, buy some good seafood, buy some Copper River salmon, buy some of the really good things, and you'll cut your bill down in about 50%. You'll eat healthier. You'll be healthier and have a better quality of life. You won't have the prescription bills that you have. It's terrible what people are paying for foods today, because, you know, if you buy a bag of potato chips, you're probably getting maybe one or two potatoes in that bag. And if somebody would say, okay, I'm going to charge you that same amount of money for two potatoes, you'd say, are you crazy? But they'll eat it in a packaged good.
Absolutely. So in the final couple minutes, what can you do to invoke some passion in our listeners out there to help them prevent inflammation and live a healthier life, to summarize the program? We only have about 2 minutes left.
Well, what I would say, if you're tired and sick of being tired and sick, then it's time to make some changes. And those changes are not taking more drugs or increasing the drugs that you're taking, but to work with your physician, to change your diet, to make some alterations in what you're doing. Make it just small ones to start with. I know you don't want to go off and just change everything at once, because maybe it might be a shock. But to make some changes, first of all, cut out the sugar. Cut out the refined carbohydrates. Start eating gluten-free whole grains like buckwheat and millet seed and amaranth and quinoa and brown rice. Good lean meat, lots of good fish, lots of vegetables, berries and fruits, and start eating more wholesome. These RC kids going to school in the morning, and they're drinking a Mountain Dew and some kind of a Danish on the way to school. And I don't think that's ever going to make anybody think any better or behave any better. So we need to start thinking about how can we feed ourselves better and our children and our family, and starting taking some supplements and using curcumin and boswellia and some of these other spices to reduce the inflammation. It can go a long way to making changes in people's lives, that I've seen people say, I never knew what it was to feel this good. I thought I just always felt bad. I always had chronic fatigue. I was always tired. I never had any energy. I always had aches and pains. And I've talked to people all across the country when they changed their diet, changed their lifestyle, got into some good natural supplements, they have a new quality of life they never knew that was possible.
Yeah, and it's not very hard to do if you just do one step at a time. Like, for instance, right now it's getting to be berry season soon, so go blueberry picking with the kids.
Yep, excellent.
Freeze them. It turns out that the berries aren't damaged with the freezing process. Have one less pasta meal and make a meal out of, like you said, a quinoa or a wild rice is lovely. Choose a wild salmon or a grass-fed lamb, or vegetarian if you are. And for breakfast, a good thing to do is the kids to have like a smoothie with a lot of fresh fruit and some almond milk. And I usually get like a good protein source, like some ground up seeds or whatnot, and make it. Remember the chocolate milk we talked about, the cocoa powder and the almond milk. These are things that are easy to do. If people belted down a few of these every day, if people change their salt and pepper shakers to garlic and curcuma and a little bit of ginger, Terry, that if they did that across every restaurant in the country, we would change the health of America.
Yes, we would. Yes,
well, thanks for being on the program.
My pleasure.
It's always great to have you on. You've been on a few times on our various programs with the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And say hi to Dr. Murray when you encounter him, and Dr. Gaetano Morello and all my esteemed colleagues out there. And that's it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We want you to stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.